We've talked about the opioid crisis on this podcast before. Today, we're going to talk about what DHS is doing to help improve awareness about opioids and help people be smarter with prescription medications. Hello, and welcome to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther, president of Wheeler Reports. Today, I'm joined by Paul Krupski, the Director of Opioid Initiatives for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Hello, Paul.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. I want to talk about the grant program and its results, but would you start by explaining for our listeners what the grant program is and how it was implemented?
Sure, and thank you for this opportunity to be able to talk more about all the efforts that we have going on at DHS, and specifically in this report, prevention efforts. So the funding that supported these grant programs was part of a larger federal grant, the State Targeted Response Grant, which came out of the 21st Century Cures Act under the Obama administration. So this grant allowed DHS to invest in prevention, treatment, and recovery efforts. On the prevention side, over the course of 2 years, we allocated $730,000 per year focused on efforts to reduce unauthorized access to prescription drugs, as well as preventing opioid deaths. Like many of our other prevention efforts, we ran this funding through our Alliance for Wisconsin Youth program. The Alliance for Wisconsin Youth Regional Prevention Centers then made funding available to member coalitions through an application process. They could then choose from the menu of strategy options that were provided for how they intended to use that, use the funding at the local level.
Okay, so I want to be clear that these organizations that were applying for and eventually received the awards from DHS as part of the grant program were organizations that had already had existing opioid reduction efforts. The grants were trying to expand those services. Is that correct?
Yes, you are correct. So the Alliance for Wisconsin Youth is a long-term program sponsored by the Department of Health Services. And through this program, community coalitions, which are members, receive free training and technical assistance to support their prevention efforts, as well as the opportunity to apply for funding when it is available. So here in Wisconsin, we have a very strong substance abuse prevention coalition infrastructure around the state, and that's something that is really well-respected nationally as well. So we believe it's important whenever possible to get funding directly to these community coalitions where they can do the work at the local level and really have the most direct impact. We have consistently had around 100 coalitions that are statewide that are members of the Alliance for Wisconsin Youth. Membership is free as long as a coalition meets a short list of qualifications.
Wonderful. Well, when we come back, we're going to discuss specifics about the grant prevention program and its outcomes.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for all of Wisconsin's 602 cities, large and small, rural and urban, speaking up for local democracy and common-sense citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
Welcome back to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and I'm joined today by Paul Krupski, the Director of Opioid Initiatives for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. So when I read the final activity report, it discusses 8 different programs that were funded through this grant program. Can you explain these? Let's start with permanent prescription drug drop boxes.
Sure. So these permanent prescription drug drop boxes increase access to a safe and responsible method of disposing unwanted and expired medications. So drop boxes can be placed in law enforcement agencies or pharmacies, and the DEA actually regulates which sites are allowable for drop boxes. So individuals can go to these drop boxes and they can dispose of their medications inside the box, which typically resembles a mailbox that you would see on the street or in a post office. The second strategy that coalitions had the option to take part in were drug take-back events.
Okay.
So drug take-back events are another method of safe and responsible disposal for unused or expired medications. And in this, for this strategy, coalitions either partnered in the semi-annual Department of Justice take-back events that happened in the spring and the fall, or other community take-back events that were organized individually by the coalitions. So individuals have been able to show up to these events on specific dates and times and turn over their unused or expired medications to law enforcement representatives for safe disposal.
So now, are these only prescription medications that they're taking, or if people have excess vitamins or excess cough medicine or things like that, are they also taking them there, or are you trying to limit this just to prescription medications?
The goal is to really get prescription medications out of homes for people that, as I said, they're either not using them or they're expired. But individuals do tend to bring a variety of things that they have in the house, and those are also disposed of properly as well.
Okay.
Nothing is actually sorted that comes through these take back events, so it's not looking at, you know, just prescription drugs or something that's over the counter. But people do tend to bring a variety of things, and those are then disposed of properly as well too.
Okay. So the next two items on the program are the prescription drug lock boxes and the prescription drug local bags. So what are the difference between the lock boxes and the bags?
Sure. So I guess I'll start by just saying both the lock boxes and the bags provide a means of secure home storage for individuals' medications. So this really helps prevent diversion and prescription medications. And in both cases, coalitions targeted populations that are in the most need of this, of these kind of secure devices. So that includes seniors, parents, people that are receiving opioid prescriptions, and then also families who have those, who may have somebody in the household with a substance use disorder. So those are the type of folks that received these secure devices. So basically, the difference between the two is the lockbox basically is your traditional looking safety box that people might have in their home to store valuables, or that you might have at a bank, that like a safety deposit box to store valuables in. And then, so it has some type of locking mechanism. It could be a key, it could be a spin dial. Coalitions had options to choose from when it came to lock boxes, so they determined what they thought would be best for their community members, and they ordered that as appropriate.
Okay.
Now, the lock bags, this would resemble a money bag that you might see at a bank, or a makeup bag that individuals might use in their home. So on the top of the bag, there's a zipper that closes tight, and then there is a lock that secures the bag. And the material in the bag is extremely durable. It's not easy. You can't rip it. It's not easily cut. And so it really does serve the same purpose of securing those medications and then providing a deterrent from someone from trying to take them.
So if I'm someone who got a prescription for opioids for, I got my wisdom teeth out and they gave me a prescription and they gave me one of these lock bags. When my prescription is done, can I turn that bag into someone? Can it be reused? What do I do with that bag?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that people can just keep with them from there on out.
Okay.
And as they, you know, so maybe that prescription's done. If you've taken the entire prescription, you can just obviously throw out the prescription bottle, store the bag until you need it next time for your next prescription. But it's something that people, it's theirs to keep. And they can, you know, obviously it's meant to, it's designed to secure those prescription medications, but people could use it to secure other things in the home as well that they want to make sure people don't have access to.
Are those lock bags something people can travel with? If they're traveling with medications, can they take those bags with them?
Yep, absolutely, they can. It's something that you, if it were locked, or you might just ask to be able asked to open it if going through some type of security.
Okay.
But it's something, it's just like any other, again, like a makeup bag or something like that, that you would be able to take with you when traveling.
So the next item is the prescription drug deactivation units. What are those?
So these deactivation units allow for individuals to conveniently and safely dispose of their medications within their home.
Okay.
So it's really, it's trying to give people another option to really safely dispose of those medications if they can't get to a drop box, if they can't get to a take back event. It's just really trying to give people as many options as possible. So for some, these deactivation units are the best solution for them. So medications are placed into these deactivation units where they mix with different chemical compounds, and then those chemical compounds dissolve the medication, and then the bag is just able to be safely disposed of in your regular garbage like you would anything else.
Interesting.
So it's safe for the environment, and it obviously is a safe way to dispose of the medications and don't have to worry about them being diverted in any way. So it's again, just another way that individuals can conveniently dispose of their meds.
And where do people get those? When they get their prescriptions, do they have to buy them? How does that work?
Yeah, so we actually purchase them from, there are several different companies, similar to the lock boxes and lock bags. There are several different companies that are manufacturing these. So we at DHS did purchase a specific kind, and then those were given to the coalitions to provide to individuals in their community. Individuals could go online and purchase them themselves, but we're also trying to look at forming some unique partnerships in the communities with other groups so that individuals are given these deactivation units along with the prescription, when the prescription is, say, written from their primary care doctor or from a surgeon after a surgery, where an opioid prescription can be pretty regular. Because to your point, it's about removing barriers. And so if individuals can receive it right then at the point of receiving the prescription or the prescription being, you know, written before they go fill it, they're more likely then to make sure that the meds are safely disposed of.
All right. So I'm familiar with naloxone. So the coordination of the and training and distribution of it, I mean, most people call it Narcan.
Right.
So you had training and distribution events for this. Tell me a little bit about what that program was.
So, as you mentioned, Narcan is a type of naloxone. That's the nasal version of naloxone, and that is what we that is what was provided through these trainings. So, the focus of this is obviously reducing the number of opioid-related deaths, which is the overall goal of everything that we're trying to do. And so, for this strategy, coalitions worked with the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin, that has offices throughout the state, to provide trainings in their community. We provided separate funding to ARCW to actually purchase the naloxone. So this ensured that individuals would then receive 2 doses of Narcan upon completion of the training. So you're not just getting trained, we're actually providing you with some Narcan upon completion so that you have it then for whatever you need.
Can anyone get Narcan and can anyone carry it?
Yes, anybody can obtain it and anybody can carry it. So we are trying to provide as many vehicles as possible for individuals to obtain Narcan in the state. One is that, like many other states across the country, we have a statewide standing order. Ours is for pharmacies and pharmacists. So you or me or any individual in Wisconsin, we can go to a pharmacy that has signed on to our standing order and go in and request naloxone. The standing order serves as your prescription.
Okay.
So you don't need to go to your primary care doctor. You don't need to go to somebody else for the prescription. You can go to the pharmacy, ask for naloxone, and then you just have to cover whatever the cost of it is, and that's based on your insurance, whatever your insurance might be.
Do the major prescription, I mean, if I walk into the Walgreens on the square, since we're in Madison, if I walk into the Walgreens on the square and say, I would like to get Narcan, what would happen?
So it does vary, and we encourage folks to go to the DHS website where all the participating pharmacies are listed. We currently have over 300 pharmacies statewide that are participating in this program. So you can really then know before you head out, and is the example you just provided, before you head out to a pharmacy and ask, this is how you can ensure that you know it'll be available to you when you arrive.
Does Narcan expire, and how often do you have to renew what you're carrying?
Narcan does expire, we do not encourage using it after that expiration date. And really, the expiration date is going to just depend on when you're picking it up. So if an order just came in in an ARCW training that you're attending, that Narcan might be okay. That might be good for up to 2 years. But if it's something that they've ordered, several months, a year ago, obviously the timeline that is good for is going to be kind of truncated a little
right.
bit. But with all of our different programs that we're doing to try and increase access to naloxone, once individuals are trained in their program, they are able to go back if it becomes expired or if they have to administer the Narcan on somebody and receive another dose.
Okay. All right, the next one, Dose of Reality Education Materials. Dose of Reality is the program that the Department of Justice started.
Correct. Dose of Reality is the primary public awareness campaign around opioids that DOJ, in partnership with DHS, has led since 2015. And this is really, as you mentioned, aimed to inform and educate community members around the improper use of prescription drugs, and coalitions were encouraged to use this campaign in their local areas and to actually use the funding to buy paid media. So there were then advertisements in movie theaters, on billboards, in newspapers, and on radio, again, really spreading the awareness and using this campaign specifically.
All right. And then finally, the last one were community education events.
Yeah, so community education events include town hall meetings, I think would be the easiest way to kind of describe what that might look like. But it could be other events that are really designed to inform and educate community members, again, on the risks associated with using opioids other than prescribed, on diversion, on overdose, and also on addiction. So it's just really, again, efforts that are made to heighten awareness within the community.
So as I went through the report and looked at some of the results for some of the programs that you did, it seemed like some were more successful than others, although the success rate for all of them was well over 80. So kudos to you guys, because it seemed like it was very popular and there was a great success rate for everything. But some did better than others. What were some of the barriers that you found to some of the success rates for some of the programs?
Yeah, so thank you for mentioning that. And just to stress that even further, the overall projects that were funded were extremely successful. And the overall completion rate for all 8 strategies combined was just about 94%. So we were very happy with that. But to your question, though, there were a few strategies that were completed at a little bit of a lower rate, specifically with permanent drop boxes. Just a reminder that they're only allowed in specific places. And Wisconsin has actually done a really good job in this area already to this point. There are over 450 permanent drop boxes statewide. So some coalitions were trying to really establish drop boxes in just those very few places that they weren't currently. And in some cases, coalitions encountered some logistical issues, such as needing to identify additional funding for surveillance equipment, and unable to identify that funding prevented the drop box from eventually being placed. Also, with the naloxone training and distribution, actually, ironically, Mother Nature was our primary barrier in that strategy. We did have a few multiple trainings that were canceled due to flooding that was experienced in Wisconsin over the last year, as well as just the winter weather issues that we deal with typically.
The polar vortex was not your friend.
Right. But then in addition, we did have a few cases of just the coalition and the trainers from ARCW not being able to come upon with it come up with a date that worked for both of them in that community. So just, again, logistical issues that kind of prevented a few of those trainings from happening.
What was the type of feedback that you got from the different organizations? Were they excited about their results? Would they love to apply for more grants? What kind of feedback did you get from them?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, you know, these coalitions, it's something that you mentioned. These are all coalitions that are doing these types of efforts in their communities already. And it's our job to support them as much as possible. And so when we have funding like this that is available to them, they are excited and they really look forward to either expanding or enhancing whatever efforts they have going on. So they're always thankful for additional financial support that can be provided. They know that these different types of strategies make a difference in their communities and they see change happen. And so, very excited and we're excited at the department level. That's something we're going to be able to continue.
Well, stay tuned. There's more to come on the DHS targeted response to the opioid crisis.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
You're listening to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and today's guest is the Director of Opioid Initiatives for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, Paul Krupski. Overall, was DHS happy with the performance of these grants?
Yes, the department was very happy with the results of this project, and we have, as I mentioned before, we have such a strong coalition infrastructure on the prevention side that we from the get-go, we were very positive that this would be a successful endeavor. So DHS is continuing these efforts. We have, for another year, we've been able to allocate another $730,000. This through our state opioid response grant, which is one of the more recent grants that we have been awarded from the federal government. So this came through the Support Act of the Trump administration. And applications for coalitions are actually available now to apply. And DHS plans to continue funding for these projects in the foreseeable future as long as funding is available.
So the applications are available for this next set of grants. When is the application process being closed?
So the application process for coalitions can be obtained through the Alliance for Wisconsin Youth website. All the information for the grant applications can be, as well as the application itself, can be found on the website, and we would encourage coalitions to go there just as they have in the past.
Great. And listeners should know that we've added a link to that right in the blog post so they can find information for that.
Thank you.
So I always like to give my guests the opportunity to offer any other thoughts or things that I may not know about or things that I've forgotten to ask. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, so I've mentioned the Alliance for Wisconsin Youth multiple times in this interview, and which all these coalitions are members of. And so I would just really encourage people who are interested and who want to learn more to visit the Alliance for Wisconsin Youth website. Here you can identify where coalitions are throughout the state, so find those that are in your area, along with contact information, so you can reach out. You can learn how to get involved, and you can even learn how to start a coalition in your area if you happen to be in a county or municipality when you look at our state map that one doesn't currently exist. So really encourage individuals that are interested in just either learning more or really getting involved to visit the Alliance for Wisconsin Youth website.
All right, and we'll make sure that we include a link to that on our blog post for the podcast as well. Well, that's the end of today's podcast. Thank you so much for sitting down with me, Paul. This has been very helpful. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day and meeting with me. I invite our listeners to go to www.thewheelerreport.com and click on the podcast blog for additional information and for links to those things that we've already discussed. I want to thank our partners in community media, Rice Lake Radio 105.5 FM, Wapaka Radio 96.3 FM, Sun Prairie Radio 103.5 FM, and Oshkosh Radio 101.9 FM. A big shout out to the Wisconsin Counties Association and the League of Wisconsin Municipalities for partnering with me on this podcast. Just a reminder to county people out there, the Wisconsin Counties Association annual conference is coming up in September, and you don't want to miss that. And thank you to Jackie for doing our sound editing.